Welcome to the Nerdist Podcast number 885. This episode brought to you by Squarespace, whether you need a portfolio to showcase your work, a store to sell the products or services that you have to offer, or a blog just to share your thoughts and ideas and feelings. Squarespace gives you everything you need to make your next move into a reality. And not to mention with Squarespace's beautiful design templates and customizable features, you can create that website because it's simple, it's intuitive. You just add and arrange your content with the click of a mouse. It is that simple. Why can everything not be that simple? Start your free trial today at squarespace.com. Use the offer code Nerdist to get 10% off your first purchase. Hey, let's go to the Nerdist Community Corkboard. These are happenings from you, the Nerdist community. I believe the events at nerdist.com email is still up and running. Katie handpicks a lot of these, and so that is where I believe she's getting these from. Mouse Pals is the maker of adorable animal-themed pins, cards, prints. There are dozens of hand-designed enamel pins to choose from. Adorable handmade greeting cards and prints. They make the perfect gift for any animal lover. So check them out at malzpals.com. Those are with a Z. MalzPalz.com. Also, LA Podfest is coming up soon. Tickets is a big podcast festival. Tickets are available now. It is October 6th through 8th, downtown Los Angeles. Nerdist Network has some great podcasts there, including The Jackie and Laurie Show, The Todd Glass Show, Cashing In with TJ Miller, plus a lot of other great shows that will also be there. You can find out more or buy tickets at lapodfest.com. This episode of the Nerdist Podcast is my friend Jim Jeffries. This is a threefer. He's been on for... Is that what a threefer is? Well, it's the third time he's been on. You know, I was just trying to mix up how I say that. Not everything that comes out of my mouth is accurate or good. Jim is promoting the Jim Jefferies Show, which is Tuesdays at 10:30 on Comedy Central. Full episodes available on cc.com. I think he got picked up for more episodes. Anyway, it's on now and you should watch it. So, Jim Jefferies. Oh, we didn't talk pinball this time. Jim is a massive pinball enthusiast. We may have talked about it a little bit. If you ever see Jim Jefferies, Jim has one of the most interesting backgrounds. He's into so many things that you wouldn't necessarily guess, and we uncover a lot of that. He tells me something sort of halfway through the podcast that blows my mind, that is a very integral part of his background. So you may actually enjoy this episode, besides the fact that Jim is hilarious and funny and all that nonsense, that comedy nonsense. Get a real job, why don't you? This episode, I was being sarcastic. You guys know that, right? I was being a character of a guy telling a kid to get a real job. Anyway, some of these are complex. This podcast also brought to you by A Game of Thrones Enhanced Editions, which are books available exclusively on iBooks. You should absolutely, if you're a fan of George R.R. Martin and Game of Thrones, which is currently airing, or if you're just reading the books, then you should look into getting a Game of Thrones Enhanced Editions on iBooks. It's an exclusive version of Game of Thrones that helps you keep track of the storylines and the characters in a really fun and really interactive way. If you're reading the books or if you read the books before, and because they're just so dense with characters and material and storylines, you know, if you forget stuff, every chapter will start with an interactive map, and you can zoom in and see exactly where the characters are. You can see what they're up to. You can click on a little crown in the text and a footnote pops up, so you will never need to consult the internet again for the Stark family tree, for example. It's all right there, just at the click of a little digital button. Whenever a new character is introduced or brought back after a while, their names appear in bold, and it tells you who they are and how they're related. These books have everything you could ever wish for: interactive maps, house histories, a sigil guide, author notes from George R.R. Martin, and amazing illustrations that bring Game of Thrones to life in a way that helps navigate everything and keep it all in your brain organized in a fine fashion. Again, these books are available exclusively on iBooks. You can go to apple.co/Game of Thrones to check them out. They're not available in all countries, but they are probably available where you live. That's apple.co/Game of Thrones. I believe this will bring your Game of Thrones fandom to a new level. Here's the Nerdist Podcast number 885 with Mr. Jim Jefferies. Katie, roll the thing.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Yeah, because you just marched over from
Jim Jefferies show. You're on the same lot.
We're on the same lot, yeah. Yeah, yeah, we're right around the corner. It's good. It's easy. Easy. It's a wonderful lot.
It's a great lot.
Yeah, yeah.
The little cafe right there, Roland
they
is great.
Did give us a letter the other day that said, just so you know, there's some asbestos.
Oh, by the way, I mean, this lot's been here for 100 years. I'm surprised. Yeah. In addition to asbestos, when they start digging that out, there's probably a million skeletons in the walls.
Oh, yes. Yeah, yes. I can't believe that Lucille Ball didn't burn the place down with cigarettes. Yeah. But it's still, yeah.
I think I have her dressing room, because that midnight stage was the Isla Lucy stage.
I've been told that I have Bill Cosby's office.
What did he shoot here?
The Cosby Show.
The Cosby Show shot here?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, it's on the list of things. There's a little list over there. The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
Fresh Prince shot here?
Yeah, yeah.
I would have thought those would have been on giant lots.
No.
That's crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, this lot has a lot of history. When you walk around, you see like, oh, they shot Burns and Allen here. There's Laurel and Hardy. There's Gary Cooper.
There's a lot of things that like didn't, like the Ben Stiller show shot here for a season.
Right.
But, you know, there's a lot of studios who use this for whatever. But I hear we're all being kicked out in the year.
Oh, because
Netflix bought it or something.
Oh, Netflix bought the lot?
Well,
someone bought the lot.
Affiliated that has only got a contract with Netflix is going to be, so it's going to be all Netflix original programming. That's the rumor I've heard. Please don't quote me on that.
No, because I did hear that, I mean, I do know that the lot was sold.
Because
for the longest time, this lot did a lot of, it had a lot of wayward shows like the Ben Stiller Show or a lot of MTV pilots or a lot of Comedy Central pilots. And then there was a lot of Disney Kids stuff here. So for periods of time, you'd see Disney Kids running around. Then RuPaul's Drag Race shoots over there. And then
RuPaul's Drag Race shoots here?
Yeah.
Oh, I love that show.
I know. It's just right over there.
Oh, I got to pop in. My ex, that's her favorite show. I got to bring her down because she RuPaul is like her favorite person on earth.
Yeah. See, this goes back to the idea that you're friends with exes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because that's a very sweet thing to do.
Yeah, yeah.
So someone bought the lot, and I think they want to super modernize it and like put in fancy offices. I mean, like right now, I would describe this lot as vintage, but in a positive way. Like it's a cool vintagey lot.
Yeah, and it's just nice to stroll around, and it doesn't feel too. You can walk anywhere on it, and there's no one questioning who you are and why you're there.
But you know, but what happens often is that high powers investors come in and ruin all of the charm of something and put in a lot of really fancy shit.
It changed from the Hollywood studios to the Las Palmas Sunset. We're not even on Sunset.
Not at all.
No,
I mean we're several blocks from Sunset. Yeah,
yeah. So if they called it the Las Palmas Santa Monica studio, that makes sense.
What doesn't make sense is that just feels like a lateral move to me.
Yeah, yeah. Like, no, the Hollywood Studios was a great name.
Hollywood Center Studios is a great name, and then just saying it's the Las Palmas studio is like okay. Well, it's not really. It's still a generic.
It's like when Time Warner became Spectrum.
Yeah, exactly. Why? What's the?
I'll be on the Spectrum.
You're on the Spectrum.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So you get the. I have Spectrum TV because of the Dodgers. That's the only reason I have it.
Oh, you're a baseball fan?
I love baseball. Yeah,
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I got season tickets at the Dodgers.
What?
Yeah, you should come sometime.
I would love to. Do you have fancy seats? You have
fairly fancy, like behind home plate, but like about five rows back from like the dugout club, which is like the really fancy ones where you get. Waiters and stuff.
Well, I have to say that
I look at the back of famous people's heads.
You do? Okay, gotcha. Because there's a really you have to have a tremendous amount of fortitude to, in the summer, go down and sit where there's no overhang.
Yeah, my one's in
because
the
sun
of,
is just beating down on the whole time.
That's why I got it. My one's the first bit of overhang.
Yeah.
Mine's the first row that's in the shade all the time.
Yeah.
So I was like, all right, brilliant.
And you really have to imagine that I'm surprised the mortality rate is not a lot higher at baseball games because people are sitting in direct sunlight for several hours.
Drinking beer
and eating really salty foods. Mm. And being completely dehydrated, robbing their bodies of every ounce of moisture that they could ever need.
Yeah, but we're still doing less than the players. they don't die.
Well, it's not prescription beer.
Yeah.
That's the difference. How has the Jim Jefferies show been going,
it's
by the
right.
way?
It's all right, yeah. It's like we're rating okay. I think the network's happy, so that's that point. But from the actual joy of it all, my biggest fear was I'm not a good reader. And even when I'm talking to you now, I'm a pretty stunted sort of speech person, you know.
You think so?
Yeah, I'm a bit like, you know, like you can hear me thinking words to say next and stuff like that, right? So me reading a teleprompter was like my biggest fear.
Right.
And they gave me the show, and I didn't tell them I couldn't read or anything. So, and so, like, I just kept that to myself. Right? but I'm getting better at it. I'm getting better at it each week. And the weird thing is that you can take as many takes as you want. So yeah. It's all fine.
It's not live.
And it's also, I treat it like stand-up, like, because I do a lot of the writing on the show, so I sort of know the material pretty good by the time we're on screen.
Right.
You know, we're not like you, where you're doing it every day.
Right.
We're doing one a week.
Oh, that's so great. You got a whole week to...
Well, I feel like Comedy Central, what they wanted me to do is they were getting rid of Larry Wilmore.
Right.
And so they called me in for a meeting, and I feel like they wanted me to replace that show.
Right.
And I was like, nah, I don't want to move to New York. Nah. Like, they were just sort of like feeling it out, right?
Right.
I was like, I'll do a once a week thing. So I feel like this is a show they didn't even really want, but they just went, okay.
Well, once a week is amazing. Like, I remember when John Oliver left The Daily Show, and I thought, well, he's crazy to leave, because if John ever leaves, he'd take it over. Mm. And then he went and did this amazing show over at HBO, and I was like, oh, he only has to do it once. You have a whole week to write a monologue, basically. What an incredible...
The problem is, though, every Tuesday we film it, and then every Tuesday I'm like, come on, no news. Because if I wake up in the morning and there's news, I'm like, ah, fuck, I'm going to have to talk about that. And so there's certain things like that always feel like they're news now, but they're not really news. Like Trump tweeting isn't really news anymore.
Right.
But it feels like it is.
Yeah.
You come in the morning, they go, Trump just tweeted this. And you're like, well, that's every day.
Right.
You can't mention every stupid thing he does every day. Like,
yeah.
It's like if Obama did it, you go, okay, that's news, right? But Trump, yeah, whatever.
I've actually learned a tremendous amount from the way he interacts. I mean, I sincerely have learned a tremendous amount from the way he interacts with people on social media, because, you know, for the longest time, I always sort of had this idea of like, well, if someone says something shitty to me, I should be able to, I'm a person, I deserve. But then when you see someone in his position snipe back at people, you go, oh, that just looks lame.
Yeah.
I look lame when I'm doing it. The only difference is my tweets don't influence the global markets.
I do it like once a month, someone snags me. One troll, like, and I'm like in a bad headspace, and it's like you shouldn't go to the supermarket when you're hungry.
Exactly,
right? You shouldn't
don't tweet when you're in a bad mood.
Yeah.
You should, don't email when you're drunk, and don't text when you're drunk, and don't tweet. Yeah. Don't tweet when you're in a bad mood.
Every now and again, like there was one guy that was just like, "This show shit, it won't last more than three episodes," like that, right? And someone right underneath, they went like, they went, "No, I reckon it will." And he goes, "Do you want to bet any money?" Right? And so I just wrote in the thing, I'm like, I'll take that bet, $5,000. Right? And he's like, no, Jim, I actually like you, but look, I'm not here to talk whether you like me or not. I want a fucking bet. I'll take the bet.
Oh my God, what's the story you told me about? Was it Packer, the guy who said he was at a poker game and then a guy was bragging about having $30 million?
Yeah, yeah. And he said, I'll toss you for your fortune.
Yeah, the guy was like bragging, like, I got $30 million.
Yeah, yeah.
And then James.
Coin toss.
Yeah. And he's like, I'll flip you for it.
Ah, the Packers. The second most rich Australians.
Who's the richest Australian?
Rupert Murdoch.
Oh, it's Rupert Murdoch. Rupert Murdoch, of course.
But he's not Australian anymore. He's an American. But he was the richest person.
Oh,
I'm watching that. Like, I'm just watching like the 90s now.
Yeah.
I watched the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, those CNN documentaries. I love them.
Yeah.
But the 60s was so good because it was like Bay of Pigs and assassinations. Martin Luther King then died. And then Kennedy's brother then got assassinated. And there's all this stuff. It's like... And civil rights movement, shit was going, the Beatles, right? Shit was going down, right, in the 60s. And the 70s was like, oh, man, we're all fucking Vietnam and wasting all time. And then the 80s got like, the Cold War was happening like this. And now they're really trying to sell the 90s. And you really realize that not much went on. Like, the Gulf War, okay, you can't compare that to Vietnam.
No, and you know...
Clinton getting a blowjob. You know what I mean?
Chain wallets. You know, I feel like watching the 90s after all those specials is like watching all the behind the musics and then getting to the Goo Goo Dolls one.
Yeah, yeah.
Where you're like, oh, their big struggle was that he had a little bit of writer's block. Not that, he couldn't go on stage because someone was blowing coke in his asshole.
Well, the 90s, they did the TV, because I always like the TV episode. They always start you off with a TV episode, and the 60s was like, it was the dawn of television, and then the 70s was all that. And then even the 80s was like, who's that guy, the old fella now?
Which one?
That produced all the TV shows.
What, Norman Lear?
Norman Lear, right? It was all about Norman Lear and all the shit he did. And now it's like the 90s start off like this. Full House was very popular. Full House is very popular. Everyone liked Friends, and there was like the 30 minutes they were going, it was like they were your friends, and you were watching it, and you're like, yeah, Friends was pretty good.
Yeah, that's right.
And then
that's
like, right. And the antithesis to Seinfeld. And you're like, all right, we had some good shows.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's so these decades fought so hard before it, so there could be like one chill decade.
I think the music episode would be good because music did pick up. Because you can listen to anything from the 90s now and it can still seem pretty current.
Right.
It all went back to guitars, no saxophone and synthesizers and
right.
grunge. You can still listen to Nirvana, it sounds current.
Well, and when you think about the 90s, though, internet. We get the internet in the
90s. Yeah, they've already done that. We started talking about, and then Silicon Valley and yep. the internet, and then Steve Jobs was doing something.
God, I was watching, I just saw a clip, and I really want to see the show. I'm from the Defiant ones.
Yeah, I haven't seen it. People said it's very good.
I saw the clip of Eminem talking about how he and Dr. Dre ended up working together, and it was just a fluke, and someone just gave Dre a CD of hit. And Eminem... And I'm saying this and people are going to go, yeah, duh, everyone fucking knows that. But an incredible improviser.
Yeah.
Like a legitimately incredible, mind-blowing improviser.
Yeah, he's one of those guys that doesn't even really like being famous. It's just that there's no way he couldn't have been.
Right.
Just too talented not to be famous.
Yeah, and because obviously I don't have the musical skill set, so I put everything back to comedy, and I'm trying to draw the parallels between like, oh, what are the real standout, you know, what's the real standout comedy thing, or what's going on now, or what state are we in now?
It's have you watched my show? You don't have to say yes.
I've not watched.
No, okay,
I've watched clips of your show. I've not watched
Brad Pitt's Our Weatherman.
Yes,
right.
Yeah,
you're just talking about people just getting together by accident, right? So this is the thing with Brad Pitt, right? It turns out he's a big comedy fan, and he just asked to be on the show. Right?
I hope you auditioned him.
No, this is what happened. He asked to be on the show, and then my management were like this. My management were like, okay, why don't you talk about how he builds homes in like New Orleans and some political cause that he might be into? And I said, well, how about we just make him our weatherman? And they're like, we hate that. They're like, and we got the same management
team,
right? And so Alex was like, no, don't do that. Don't even pitch that to him. Right, so they were already blocking it before I got there, and so I ring up Brad and I'm like, I've got these ideas. He goes, I don't like them. I don't like that one either. I don't like that one. Okay. How about you could be our weatherman? Love it. Okay. And he came down once and did the weatherman, and we thought it'd be a one off. And then he's like, should I come back next week? And I'm like, yeah,
that's fucking amazing.
Yeah, he's been on 4 episodes. and he's so nice, and it's like it's the only time that we put like a big trailer out. That's our one expense we have.
This is the trailer. Yeah, you do want to put that expense.
Yeah, we give him a trailer.
It's probably the best trailer of any weatherman in the modern world.
Well, now it's like so I'm friends with Russell Crowe, so I ring him up. He texts me and he goes, Brad Pitt, your weatherman. That's how I imagine he said it, right? And I said, yeah, and I was like, do you want to be the sports guy?
And just talk about rugby?
Yeah. He's like, oh, I'll think about it. I'm still trying to get Russell Crowe to be my sports guy.
I mean, you really, if all of your correspondents were like Oscar-winning performers, that would be absolutely incredible.
Yeah, I'm just going to ask every famous person I've ever met. I feel like once you get those two, you can get anyone, right? You just keep asking.
You know what's great about it is that no one ever asks them to do shit like that.
Yeah,
because everyone has
this preconceived notion.
Like, well, they're never going to do that. But I bet they're dying to do shit like that, where it's low stakes. They don't have to carry anything.
They live down the road.
They can just come in and fuck around and have fun.
Yeah.
But
it's when Brad's on set, though, it's like funny because we do a rehearsal while the writers come in, and then the Brad Pitt bit gets filmed before a studio audience comes in, right? Because timing, he had to do it at a different hour or whatever, right? Anyway, when that happens, all of a sudden, all the writers' wives show up to work.
That's really interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
Just by total coincidence.
Just by total coincidence. I just want to see where you're working, honey. Yeah. And every guy's like, oh, God, I mean, fuck it. Oh, my sister's here as well.
You know what a fan of Jim Jeffries I am. I have all of his records.
Yeah, yeah.
He doesn't put out records.
And they're all overly laughing at his bits. They don't laugh at anything I do in rehearsal.
Silence.
And then all of a sudden, Brad's on there like, oh, and they're chortling.
When is that guy going to be done? No, that's Jim. He's the host of his show. It's his fucking show.
But I think maybe you told me a story about how you were having a conversation with Brad Pitt, and he very sincerely said something like, oh, yeah, you know, I'm kind of going through a breakup. And you go, yeah, I know. Everybody knows. And he just was unaware.
He's very sweet. Yeah,
he was unaware that everyone...
When I first met him, we talked about, like... And I don't want to... I don't have too much I can say. But I was going through a breakup, and we were just a couple of single dads.
Yeah.
It was very sweet. It was very sweet. How's your kid? It was just like, yeah, it broke the ice very well.
Well, that's one of the things that's great about podcasting is being able to talk to people... And removing that whole layer of, because I think most people are very self-aware and probably get very uncomfortable when people come up and go, oh my God, I love you, you're the greatest guy ever. Like, yeah. You should feel weird about that.
Yeah.
You should never be cool with that.
Yeah.
And if you are, then you're probably a sociopath.
Yeah, but you still get starstruck occasionally, I would imagine.
Me?
Yeah.
Oh, I get starstruck all the time.
Yeah.
But I mean, I sat pushing it down.
I was at dinner last night in Providence, in LA, the restaurant Providence, and Crispin Glover was sitting next to me.
Did you talk to him?
I didn't. No, he seems like a weird guy.
No, he's been on the podcast. He is in a great way.
Right.
It
was a fine restaurant. I didn't want to bother him. But he was at the table right next to me.
Hey, Crispin Glover!
Yeah, yeah. And it's like you want to start thinking about movies you did do that aren't Back to the Future.
Right.
Because you don't want to go Back to the Future. So you think, I'll go through the catalog of Hot Tub Time Machine. Big fan.
Ah, bro, there you go. Or Willard.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. But I think, but what I'm saying is that if you are a celebrity and you ever... And you don't feel weird about having people come up and shower you with...
Yeah.
Then
Oh, you're saying from the other
from
end.
From the other
yes,
end, it's
yes,
weird.
Yes, no, I get
weird. You should never really get used to that, I don't think.
Yeah, I think... But I think people who want to be famous, like Instagram models and stuff like that, I think they enjoy it.
Yes.
Because fame is their motivation.
And it's a currency.
Yeah, fame is their motivation, not the thing that makes you famous.
Right.
And the thing that we're famous for is comedy, and that's... That's the love, not the fame.
Right.
You know what I mean? So, yeah, I get used to it a lot more after a gig. You know, if you're in a bar straight after a gig, I get used to it. But I've still never been used to it in a shopping mall, someone coming up to me.
Hey, well, it's going to happen a lot more now.
My dad's just got the onsets of, like, early dementia,
right? No.
Just very, very, very early. Very, very early, right? So, so it's not tragic yet, right? But there was the one weird thing, because in Australia, I do, you know, big... like rooms, you know, and I was walking on the street and some guy came up and went, you're a legend, mate, can I have a photo with you? And my dad took the photo, and my dad turned to the bloke and went, what do you want a photo with him? Like my dad couldn't, his brain couldn't.
Oh, that's so sad.
And then afterwards he's like, why does that guy want a photo with you? That's weird.
Oh, did he not?
He just forgot that I was famous.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It wasn't like... It was just his son, and his son's not famous.
Of course.
Right? So that's the, you know, that's the weird thing that
he... How old is he?
76.
He's 76 years old.
Yeah, but it's very... He won't start to have real problems until into his 80s.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
So, and to be honest with you, he wasn't remembering a lot of shit in his 40s. You know what I mean?
Like, right.
My dad was always a forgetful fella. So
yeah.
He might have had this for years and no one noticed. You know?
Yeah, I don't know. I know my dad died when he was 72, but in the last few years of his life, he would repeat things, and he would forget... He didn't really have a short-term memory retention, even though he could tell you stuff from 30 years ago.
Right.
And I was wondering, like, is this going? I mean, is this a precursor? I don't really know what the first stages are.
Well, I think the way they test, I'm sure there's a scan of some kind. But the way they tested my dad is they ask you a lot of simple questions. And see, and you know, you have to get like 70% of it right.
But honestly... Because you're a busy guy, and I'm a busy guy. If someone sat us down and asked us 100 really simple questions, because our brains are in so many different directions, don't you think we would...
Yeah, but these are pretty simple. What day of the week is it?
Oh, gotcha. I have to think about that sometimes, though.
Actually, what is
like, today is Thursday.
It is Thursday, yes.
Okay, so that's 0 for 1.
And what are the name of your grandchildren?
Okay.
And my dad went, there's Sam and there's the blonde one.
Okay.
And what's that one? You know, so that was... It was simple questions like that.
Gotcha.
But I, you know... Yeah, there's... I, I, I sometimes forget the order of the months or the order of the seasons.
Right.
The months I always get. The right. seasons, I'm like, what's the one after summer?
Well,
like it's one of the milder temperatures. It's either autumn or spring.
Well, your brain has, a finite amount of capacity.
Yeah.
And so when you get caught up all day doing all the things that you are doing to essentially power your life, I feel like your brain just kind of like finds little bits of RAM wherever it can. So it scoops out things like that. It's like, autumn, we don't need that right now. It's spring.
I studied music at university. I used to be able to notate without even hearing something, a manuscript of music, and know exactly what it would sound like just from looking at it or writing it, right? And the other day, I couldn't read music.
Your brain didn't need it anymore.
I haven't done it in like 15 years.
Yeah.
And I don't know.
But I bet if you started practicing.
I think I could probably get it down again in about 4 hours.
It would come
back. If I just really sat there and just fucking for 4 hours.
It would really come back.
But I couldn't just read it just naturally like words.
Is it... Do you think you're going to write about it? Are you going to write about what's going on with your dad, do you think?
Yes, I see more what's going on. My mother's just got Parkinson's. Now, that's funny because... she's always ill. She's always been ill. So when she says she has Parkinson's, everyone just went, huh, all right, because she's always got an ailment.
Sure, right.
And so when she was very young, she had polio, which is very bad.
Oh, my God.
Right? So she lived through that. And I think because if she had polio as a kid and everyone came and visited her in the hospital and she couldn't walk for a year, that she enjoys being sick now.
Sure.
Because people visit. And,
sure.
You know, how are you doing? You
right.
know? And so my whole, like by the time she was my age, she had this back that was so bad. My back's bad. That I thought she was an invalid, right? My mum can hardly move. Her back is so bad. You know, she should be in a wheelchair, right? Anyway, then she got diabetes. And I haven't heard about the back in like... I haven't heard about the back in 30 years.
So it's just one thing.
Yeah, right? So she's had diabetes. Oh, my diabetes, my sugar levels. Oh, anyway, Parkinson's just come in. I haven't heard about diabetes.
What's next?
Yeah, what's next? Cancer's got to beat Parkinson's, right?
I don't know, actually.
If she gets like a tumor that's got like a week.
Maybe it does.
But at the moment, she's just like, oh, I've got Parkinson's. You've never heard anyone happier to have Parkinson's disease than my mother. She's over the moon about it. I ring her up and she's just like, how are you, Mum? Oh, my Parkinson's. Is Dad there? Oh, yes, I'll get him.
I'll get it.
It's hard to hold the phone with my Parkinson's.
She does. But you haven't.
I had a friend in Britain. I think it was Paul Bentley or Bentley, like the actor.
Right.
And he had, I hope I'm not speaking out of term. He's a nice fellow, good comic. And he has Parkinson's so bad that he really shook, like really, so right. obvious that he had Parkinson's. So his stand-up routine was a lot about shaking a lot and having Parkinson's, as it would be.
Right.
Right. But then what happened was he fucking, they put him on this medication and he was solid as a rock. And it fucked his whole stand-up. Like he said to me, he goes, I got to write a whole new set. Fucking this medication's working too well.
Well, that is it, because things do have to happen to write about.
Yeah, it's like if Brad Williams grew tall all of a sudden. He'd be like, ah, oh, this screws me.
God damn it. But there is something about it, because it, you know, I feel like your journey as a comic is your sort of journey to get to know yourself and what your identity is, and you might shed a few identities along the way, but having to start with a whole new identity is a whole new series of, fuck, who am I? What do I like?
To deal with a lot not being broke. Early on in my career, my whole thing was, I'm broke. I've got no fucking money.
Now you can't do that. It would be not authentic.
And it's always like I was in the dollar store and I was buying a thing. And right. You know what I mean? It was a funny story of the everyday man. And now I don't really have that anymore. So I try to, you know. And also, it used to be a lot of stuff about my childhood, and that stuff runs out. Because your childhood's only so long.
Right.
I've told every story.
And you can't, your every special can't be about your childhood.
Well, this is the weird thing, because then I started talking about my child's childhood, right? My son's childhood. And then people are like, oh, he just talks about his son. And so I'm thinking about just stealing his childhood and just saying these are things that happened to me. Because then it seems more authentic or personal.
Hey, you kid, go play with knives. Tell me about it. Tell me what happens. You're just sending him off on danger missions.
When the billboard for the Jim Jefferies show was put up, I got told by a friend, like, it's on Sunset. The billboard's on Sunset. So I picked up Hank from school. And, you know, like in that bit of Sunset without that Comedy Central billboard?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There's a lot of billboards around there.
Right.
And there's a big, tall one that's a whole building on the left.
Yeah. Right?
And so I said, Hank, we're going to see a very special billboard, and you'll know it as soon as you see it, like that, right? And we're driving along. I go, is that one? No, not that one. It's coming up. You'll know it when you see it, right? Then we drive up to my big fucking head on a billboard, and then my son looks past at the next one and goes, new Minions movie.
Well, your son, just part of the curse of you being a dad is that your son is probably not going to be overly impressed outwardly
by
anything.
I told this story on Conan, I think, but the first billboard that I had up was for one of my Netflix specials. And the billboard, this special was called Freedom, and the billboard was me sitting like an eagle with like machine guns mm-hmm. and an American flag hanging off me, this giant eagle, you know, acting all American, right?
Yeah.
And so my son sees that on the way home. And he comes home, and I'm playing a video game, and he sits down next to me. He goes, hey, Dad. And he goes, were you riding on a big eagle? And I said, oh, yeah, yeah, I was. He goes, when did that happen? And I went, the other day. And he goes, where was I? I go, you're at school. He goes, that's fucked. And I never heard him say that word. He hasn't said it since or before.
Did you laugh?
He used it properly.
He did use it properly.
And he used fuck, not fuck. That's fuck.
Does he have an accent? Does he have
accent? He has an American accent.
How are you going to prevent, you know, from someone who grew up without a lot of means and resources, how are you going to ensure that your kid's not going to be
there's no way.
Spoiled asshole?
There's no way. I'll tell you what happened, right? I was getting to start to feel that like he just fucking, he was riding his bike around in the house the other day.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, that can't be right. Right? He's riding around in the, we have marble floors, he's riding around the house. I'm like, fuck this kid. And so I was like, every time we fly, I fly business class, he's sitting next to me in a big chair, and I said, all right, this is what we're doing. We're getting an RV, we're booking a whole lot of gigs. When me and his mum were still together, we're booking a whole lot of gigs. I go, I'm driving to each gig and we're camping at fucking each venue, and that's what we're gonna rough it like this, right? And then like AEG and Bilstein were like, Jim, that's a lot of driving, and you're going to be tired, and you want to have your sleep, and then you're going to do a show. And how about we just get you a van, and we get you a driver, so you don't have to do the driving. You can stay in the back with your kid, and you can. Right? I was like, all right, I'll do that. And then they're like, yeah, but then you'll still need hotels. It's a van. It's not like a. So in the end, I took Lenny Kravitz tour bus.
A van, just a little van.
And I came out in the morning, my kid was eating a bowl of cereal watching TV.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, oh, God, yeah, he's learned nothing.
Yeah, I mean, because I would imagine it's just something that I'm curious about for when I have kids and other friends of mine who are doing very well are having this struggle of like, well, I want him to be able to do fun, cool things.
Yeah.
But how do you make sure that they don't get entitled?
Going to Disneyland and paying for the front of the line people.
Right. Right.
Because I don't want to line up.
Right.
And a lot of it's not that you want him to do fun things. I don't want to do bad things. Right. And so it's like, it's this, because I want him to sit in economy, but I'm not going to sit in fucking, I don't want to sit in economy myself. Right. So it's very hard to. Yeah. You know, I bet the struggle is a lot different. Things I haven't done, I'm not. Giving him an inheritance that is sitting there. What do they call it?
A trust?
Trust fund. I'm not giving him a trust fund. I put a little bit into a college fund, but, you know, I feel like I'm going to make him get a job.
Right.
One of the things I'm going to do when he's 15, go work at the fucking dog on a stick
right.
place or whatever,
right.
Wetzel's Pretzels or whatever, right? And I'm going to make him do that.
Yeah.
You know, but, like, you know, fundamentally, it's still. Goes home to the same house, and I don't think you can stop it. The good thing about my kid is, and this is like sounds like just a proud parent, but it's true. Mike and other people who meet him, he's just really good. I'm all for discipline. I just don't have to discipline him. He doesn't. I've given him like 3 timeouts, and they were like tragic moments in his life that he still talks about.
Oh, like, that's sweet.
Yeah, like, and he's got friends that come over and spend the night, and I'm like, these fucking kids are. Right? And the parents are disciplining the shit out of him. They're opening pill bottles and climbing into cupboards. And, you know, I'm like, what is...
You know what it is, though? You gave him a cool name. Hank is a pretty cool name.
Yeah, yeah. Hank's
if he was like a Skyler or a Taylor, he'd be a fucking asshole. Yeah. Like, you got to be really careful not to give your kid a douchebag name. And I'm sorry if anyone out there is a Skyler or a Taylor. But I mean,
oh, he's got so many school that you're like, oh,
but
Rush.
But you know that's a name you hear get yelled at the Grove.
Mm.
Skyler! Skyler, stop it. Come here. Put that down. You already have an iPhone. I'm not getting you a third one.
Scott, my producer, he, me and him took our kids of the same age. We took them to Disneyland. Sorry, I'm stuttering today. Took them to Disneyland, and it was Jack and Hank.
Ah, oh, that's great.
And they're like, where's Jack and Hank? It felt like we were taking two old men around with us.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll catch up to you. You know what you got to do, though, is you got to get the front of the line passes for you guys, but then make the kids wait in line and go, well, this is how you learn.
They're still molestable.
Oh, okay, yeah.
You got to wait till they're not molestable. When they're 13,
then
I'll be
you
like,
can do
yeah,
it.
Yeah, off you go.
Then you.
I'll happily, when he's 13, sit in economy. I'll be up front here, mate. I'll see you in Boston.
I'm on a board now.
Yeah.
You're not till group four, you got to chill here.
I'll tell you a great boarding story. This is a great story. So I'm sitting, I'm at JFK, and I'm flying to LA, and I'm diamond because of how much I fly with Delta, and the line's huge, and it's one of those ones with the flatbeds. There's only a few flights that do it domestically, but it had the flatbeds, right? And so they let in first, so there's the line going to the right, which is all the people who are premium passengers and SkyMile Plus people,
mm-hmm.
and the long line to the left, which is everyone else, right? And so this lady, this sort of older Jewish lady, is just like, oh, this line has never been so long. I can't imagine. Oh. And so I'm just ignoring her. And anyway, so then they go, anyone in a wheelchair, come on. Anyone with kids, come on. Diamond medallions, come on. So I get to leave first and then everybody else from that line, right?
Right.
So there's only like 10 diamond people all going. And I sit down and this lady, same lady, she's sitting in the chair just next to me, right? And She goes, how did you become diamond? I've never met anyone who's diamond before. You must travel a lot. Why do you travel so much? And I've opened up a magazine now. Like, I'm really not communicating at all, right? And I'm like, oh, I work in entertainment, right? And then she goes, what do you do in entertainment? And I said,
it's a question you never want to answer.
I'm a comedian. And then she goes, I work in entertainment as well. And I said, oh, yeah, what do you do? And she goes, I cast all of Martin Scorsese's films.
Oh, and then you get very interested
in magazine now. And all of a sudden I'm like, oh, well.
Let me tell you about diamond status. I'm allowed to take one companion with me. What are you doing?
Anyway, I chatted to her. She's a very nice lady. I chatted to her about, we talked about Martin Scorsese films, and I talked for 5 hours. Afterwards, I get off the plane. And I ring Alex, our manager, and I go, Alex, I just sit next to the lady who does fucking Martin Scorsese's films. And he goes, I know her. I'll ring her up right now. And he fucking rings her up, and he goes, she loves you. She thinks you're the most charming young man she's ever met. She thinks you're a delight. And I'm like, he goes, what we'll do is we'll get her to come to one of your gigs, right? And I'm like, all right, brilliant. And they go, do you want to come to a gig? And she goes, I'd love to. And then she rings back 10 minutes. I just watched one of the clips. No, thank you.
Oh, no. So close.
So after all that good work, it turned out that I was still a dirtbag anyway. And
do you have a clean set?
I might. I haven't told that story in years. I'm doing Colbert. I might tell that story on Colbert. It's a good story,
It's
right?
a great story.
Yeah, I'll tell it. Yeah.
And also, it could give her a little bit of a wake-up call, like, oh, he's okay after all.
Yeah, I think that would be a good story. Do I have a clean set?
Do you have a clean set?
No, I don't believe in doing stand-up comedy on television. I only believe in doing it on specials. You can do a special on television.
I just mean, like, for corporate gigs and stuff.
Oh, no. One time when I first got here, Comedy Central was interested in me, like, 8 years ago. And I'd just come from Britain, and they went, maybe you can get a half hour. Can you do a clean half hour? And they go, and like my new management were like, this is the only hookup we've got, right? And I'm like, all right, yeah, I can do it. And I was terrible.
Did you edit your set, or did you have to write new
stuff?
I
took out the swear words, and it just didn't flow. It's like, no, I'm nothing without it, evidently. I didn't know. And also for corporate sets, what is this fucking... Who wants to do a corporate set? Every time I do like a charity gig, I feel weird.
Oh, yeah.
You know, fucking...
And then that's when I shot all over the back of the...
Yeah.
Anyway, we're here for the kids.
Yeah, exactly. It's like...
give generously.
Well, they always ask me at like my kid's school to do like a set. And I'm like, no, I'm not.
By the way, you don't want to go up in front of other parents and
I have to hang out with the other parents. And...
Yeah. You don't want to do
that. But there's other famous parents at the school. I've been told that Daft Punk goes to my school.
Oh, really?
But I don't know who they are because they're not in their helmets.
There's not like a kid with a tiny little helmet on. Like, oh, there he is. He looks like the Big Pen guy.
Yeah, I keep on looking like, who's Daft Punk?
Did you ever tell, would you, you don't have to, the story about, because there were so many insane people at that party.
Oh, I tell that on stage.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, that's going to be in my next stand-up special.
Oh, that's
great. It's a 20-something minute story. It's a very, very long story about me going to perform... at Mariah Carey's party.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I can't tell it right now.
Don't tell it now because you're doing it for your special.
I'm going to do it on a special.
But as a teaser.
I told a bridge version on Kimmel, which was like a 4-minute version of it.
Right.
But the whole thing is. And also, the story that I tell on stage isn't as extreme as what actually happened. There's things I left out that
to
I just.
Protect.
I just don't want to be blacklisted from the entertainment business.
Of course.
There's things I haven't said, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, it was pretty extreme.
Long and short of it is you were performing at Mariah Carey's birthday party and there were a lot of famous people there and weird shit happened. And so people, when you tell that on stage, I am excited to see you tell
the
20-minute
version. Well, the weird thing is because the end of the story ends with me talking to Al Pacino for like 5 minutes of the thing, right? So there's a 5-minute Al Pacino impersonation. And I'm not an impersonator, but I think with impersonations, I was just doing the gist of it.
Yeah.
And now I can do it. Just over time, I've just gotten it. I'm not going to do it now because I don't think it's the voice. I think it's the face and all that type of stuff.
Right.
But he's exactly what you want him to be. Exactly.
I wrote on an AFI tribute to him maybe 10 or 11 years ago. Jeremy Piven was hosting and Blaine Kapach and I went and basically would write jokes for him as he would come off stage as shit would happen. We'd write jokes and give him jokes. And they were honoring Al Pacino. And it was so strange just sort of being there backstage, just as I was invisible, but I was watching this whole thing unfold. And he was just like talking to these other, like the most, like the Charlize Therons of the world. He was like, I don't know. I mean, they said, show up and, they want to give me an award and I don't know. Why should I get an award? Like he was even at that point in his career, seemed to still not really understand why someone would want to give him an award.
Yeah. He actually said hoo ha in front of me. like when I do it in the impersonation, I think people think I'm making that up. He actually said, like he said to me, he goes, oh, I like what you do. Oh, you tell stories. Nobody tells stories anymore. You tell a story. I'm very much enjoying this tale. And then you get distracted. And I think, oh, no. I'll never hear the end of the story. But then you come back to the story, and I'm like, hoo-ha, you remembered the whole time. That's exactly what he said to me.
Was your mouth agape? Like, how is this my life?
Because that was a weird thing, because that's a little stand-up trick. And Billy Connolly used to do that very well. Billy Connolly used to tell, like, a story, and then, like, 15 minutes later, he'd finish the story, and you go off on this tangent forever, and you think, oh, I never remember. And I always thought, oh, he's forgotten. And I used to fall for it, and I do that now.
You bring it back around.
You bring it back, but of course you haven't forgotten. You know exactly where you are in the story. It's just a trick.
But that's what's so great is that when you do bring it back around, people are like, it's kind of the ta-da moment. People are oh, he remembered.
Yeah, and all you have to bring it back is, well anyway, so the cop was standing there, right? As soon as you do that, everyone's happy again.
How often are you performing now?
I'm going away this week. I'm doing Santa Rosa and San Jose, and I just did Vegas. I'm doing like maybe two weekends a month.
Oh, that's great.
On top of the show, you know.
That's fantastic.
But it's tricky because we do a lot of the writing on Friday and Monday, so it's like, you know, I want to be back on time or whatever. And I hate missing Fridays for that very reason.
Right. Do you perform locally at all?
Not at the moment. It's like being a single dad and having the show and also doing other gigs. My time's pretty taken up.
Right.
You know? And yeah, I would, but it's just I haven't had the availability of late. I don't understand the guys who get up every fucking night in town.
It's yeah.
Like, what are you looking for? You know what I mean? Like, you're on the road as well. And it's like, it's this weird thing when people go, hey, come down to my show. It's a great room. You know what's a great room? A 3,000-seat theater. That's I did on the weekend. That's a great
room. That's a
room.
Great room. Yeah.
And now you want me to come to a pub and, like, nothing against it. I'm right. Ground roots comedy. Love it. Right. But then it's like, it's a great place to try out new stuff. No. Once again, the 3,000-seater, way better. They're way more forgiving. They already like me.
Coming in, they paid money and got in their
and
cars
and guess
put
what?
On
the 3,000 people in Kansas, there's no executive from Comedy Central in the audience by accident.
You know, it really is, I mean, like, it is a tremendous feat to be able to convince people to put on pants, separate themselves from money that they have worked hard for.
Yeah.
Get in their cars, go park, deal with other people, sit down in a seat and focus on this. That is a tremendous feat to get even one person to do that.
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, 3,000 people.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's I the biggest gig I've ever done was I did the Melbourne, I don't know, no, Perth tennis arena. That was 11,000 or something like that.
Damn.
And when you get into that one, like we've done those big oddball shows together. Where it's like 20,000 people. But it is that weird thing where people heckle at that stage and you're like, don't care. You can yell out whatever you want. I'm not talking to you. No one. You
know. What I found about with the dynamics of that was interesting, I thought was interesting, is that when you're in a club or even, I think up to 3,000, I think 3,000 is like the max before it gets uncontrollable.
Well, 5,000 with a roof feels the same as 30,000 without a roof.
Got it. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. But what I noticed when we did the oddball, because I think, you know, those shows were 15 to 22,000 people or something, is that whereas in a club, you might have like a, you know, a person over here who's a heckler or a person over here who's not into it or a person over there who's a bigger laugher. But in an amphitheater, that becomes sections. It's like this section is a heckler. This section is a good laugher. This section's not into it.
Yeah, it's also that weird thing is with those oddball shows is there's fans of certain people.
Who are tolerating everyone else.
Yeah, they're tolerating everyone. They've just come to see one or two acts.
Yeah.
Like we did the ones with Dave Chappelle. Was that were you on that one?
It was one of the like four I didn't do.
I did the Dave Chappelle and the Fly of the Conchords ones, and they couldn't be two different audiences more. You know what I mean? So there's Fly of the Conchords fans and there's Dave Chappelle fans.
Oh, I'm sorry. I misunderstood. Dave hopped on. I did the following year. Dave hopped on a few of those shows. I did not do that. That tour, I heard, was incredible.
That was the best one, I think. But it was just like when I went out, it was like if there was 20,000 people, there was 1,000 people who really liked me.
Right, right.
We're really excited. Okay, and when you get that 1,000 people standing ovation from the 20,000,
are they in all different places?
Yeah, it's just very weird. Like everyone's not committing to this.
It sort of looks like one of those things where you mash your hand into all the pins and just like pins stick up, and the rest of them are flat.
Yeah, I always find the standing ovation to be a weird one because not everyone's into it.
But some people just do it because they're like,
yeah. And then the standing ovation at the end, I don't count that one because everyone's getting up to leave anyway.
Oh, that's true.
And it's like, yo, you got a standing up at the end. And I'm like,
everyone's just leaving.
I just did like a 2-hour show.
But it'd be weird if you got a standing ovation in the middle of the show, though.
Yeah, that's never happened.
That's too weird.
That's never happened. I want one of those now.
Has anyone hit you in the face recently on stage?
Not recently. I've had two proper attacks, and I've had another three attacks that were fought, that were actually beaten before they got to me, were tackled on stage.
Oh my god!
And now one attack was on stage, which was on film, was the Manchester Comedy Store, which everyone's seen on YouTube, or you might have seen on YouTube. And then another one was just I was in like Nottingham, and I finished the gig just in a comedy club, and a guy just came up after. Behind me and smashed my head into a table, fractured my skull.
Just didn't
like the show. Waited his time. I hadn't talked to him. I still couldn't tell you what the guy looked like. I woke up in an ambulance.
Oh my god!
And I just bang into the table and just boom. And actually, I didn't wake up. I woke up on a gurney, being taken to an ambulance and just with a bachelorette party of fucking Northern English chicks with bunny ears on going, that guy was a fucking asshole. Like, it was a weird, like, is this heaven?
Did he get arrested or?
I think what happened was, I think the security gave him a kicking. And but then I got a $10,000 from the British government for a victim of crime. Now, this is the thing. You can talk about socialized healthcare or whatever. I wasn't a British citizen. Jim Jeffries isn't my real name. I went in, like, you know, I've got a stage name. Jeffrey James Nugent is my real name.
Okay.
Jeffrey James, Jim Jeffries, whatever. Yeah.
Sure.
I went into the hospital as Jim Jeffries. No one ever checked my identification. I was in there for 5 days, and then I just walked out at the end.
And someone handed you a check.
Yeah, yeah, and then someone handed me a check for 10 grand. Yeah.
That's not bad.
And I was just basically a tourist living there.
Why did you change your name?
Well, I had a promising musical theatre career at one stage, an opera scene career.
That what?
Stage. Yeah, very this amount of time in my life.
Oh, my God.
And so I studied musical theatre at university, and then in my summer job outside of school was I went and sang for the Australian Opera for 2 operas, right? Just in the chorus, right? And so that was my summer job, was being an opera singer, right? And so I wanted to be this dirty comedian or whatever like that. And I thought, Jeffrey Nugent could be the name of that guy if that career takes off.
So you have the two separate.
I walked on stage the first time, and it's Jeffrey with a G, G-O-F-F-R-E-Y, and Nugent, N-U-G-E-N-T, right? And I walked on, and the first open mic spot I did, someone said, please welcome Godfrey Nugent. And I thought, that's not even close. Godfrey Nugent. And so I'm like, we have to fix this, right? And so Nugent, I never even heard of Ted Nugent. Like, it wasn't a very well-known name in Australia. Is this still working?
Yeah.
It wasn't a very well-known name in Australia. So I was like, all right, so my name's Jeffrey James. And I thought, I'll change to Jeffrey James will be my name. And then I thought, no, Jim Jeffrey sounds better. And Jeffrey James.
It does sound good.
Yeah, it sounds better.
It has a nice flow to it.
It doesn't sound made up.
Doesn't sound made up. And it's almost 2 first names, but not 2 first names.
Yeah. And so, yeah, Jeffrey James is 2 first names, and that always sounds stupid.
Do you ever sing anymore?
Well, this is the whole thing. I got nodules on my vocal cords, and I had to have surgery. And the surgery is a lot better now. This is 20 years ago, and the surgery used to mean... Now they do it with lasers and you can talk like in 2 days.
Mm-hmm.
You used to get it done, scraped off with a scalpel, and maybe they worked, maybe they didn't. You know, like Julie Andrews didn't work and she could never sing again.
Right.
Right. And so I wasn't allowed to talk for months. And I had to move back in with my parents because I couldn't have a job or anything like that. And I was just sitting there with a notepad. Just, oh man, fucking, you know what I mean? And then I was watching a shitload of stand-up specials. And I started thinking, I'd like to be a stand-up comedian. And then I thought, if I can't sing, I'll do that. I was just plotting my life. So, I had a lot of time on my hands to think.
So it was almost the best thing that happened to you.
Yeah, and then I actually got nodules again. Because it's from yelling or smoking or drugs or drinking or whatever the stuff gives it to you. Just wearing your voice out. And so I can still sing in tune. But, you know, you wouldn't think I'm a great singer now. But I was a promising singer. I was on scholarship. University.
Holy shit.
And all that happened was I sang in a school musical, and then there was like people like, you have to go to this college and do this and learn how to sing, and you know what I mean? And so like straight out of school, I went and auditioned for a course that 3,000 people auditioned for and they get 20 spots to. And it's the same course that Hugh Jackman did. And he's all singing, dancing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it was like going to fame. Like the TV movie, show. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was exactly like that. It was just girls just in leotards limbering up all the time. And I used to have like a lesson, like one a week, that would be like, you have to do an hour of tap.
Oh, my God.
All this shit. And you only had to pass those subjects. My main jam was singing, and I did a bit of acting. And, you know, what happened to me was, because I was 6 foot tall and slim at the time or whatever, I was a tenor. They're always the romantic leads and everything. So they'd make me the romantic lead in all the productions at the university, right? And all the sort of fat sort of people were always the comedy relief or whatever. And I was the romantic lead, and I was getting heaps of laughs by accident. Just, you know what I mean? That's what I remember thinking. I'm just funny to people. You know what I mean? Like, I got a weird head or something to me. I don't know. You know what I mean? So I started thinking, I might do musical theatre, but I'll do comedy parts, just comedy. So I had a healthy interest in comedy then. You know.
And then it just, you started doing stand-up.
Yeah, I just started doing stand-up, and then I didn't finish my course in university. I got an offer from a guy called Gary Hu, who was a pretty popular comic in Australia, had been on TV, and he was going to play all the gold mining towns. And he saw me in Perth doing a fucking 10-minute open spot. He said, oh, do you want to come with me and be my opening act? And I just quit university.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Like the offer was just too big to refuse.
Yeah.
I could hardly sing anymore because of the nodules. I was just getting by. You know, I was like, fuck this, I'm out. You know, I told my parents, who were shattered by the whole thing, because there was something about singing in the opera or that type of arts that my mother found fancy.
Well, she thought she could see you at the Sydney Opera House.
Yeah, and the weird thing is, like, all my mates from college, like one of my best friends is a professional opera singer, a guy called Andrew Moran. I go and see him in the opera every time I'm in Australia, and it's a fucking shit living. I'm so glad it didn't work out. It's just shit. Unless you're like fucking Pavarotti, or you're singing in Italy or something, it's like you're paid for by the government. It's a subsidized art form these days. At least in Australia, it is. You know, they can't make their money back on the shows, and the shows only run for a couple of weeks. See, something like over here, you can have a purpose-built set for something like Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, right? But that set takes 8 months to pay off, and then they're into profit. Operas run for 2 weeks. They can never
It's
subsidized by the government because we feel like this is an art form we should keep.
Right.
But in reality, in 100 years, opera will be gone.
Well, the other problem I would imagine is sort of what you were going through, which is you have to maintain... Like, you're almost a prisoner of your own throat.
Yeah. My mate, he's scales every day, and he's this and he's that, and you know, and then he has to sing every fucking... And it's that real... Here we are, that type of thing, you know, where they have to speak like this, you know, and he does all that stuff all day, you know, that's a pain in the ass, you know.
Or before shows, you can't really talk, I would imagine.
Well, I used to, when we did operas at university, because I did musical theater and then I did operas as a second course. When we did operas, I didn't even know what I was saying. We meant to learn, like, do an hour of Italian and an hour of German every week and all that type of stuff, but I used to just go down to the library and rent like a CD of that opera and then just impersonate whatever fucking the diction that he said.
Yeah.
You know, that's the words, I guess. And then I go, is this a love song? All right, brilliant.
That's all you need to know. Listen, I don't think ABBA knew what English words were when they had all the hit songs.
Yeah. Oh, you know, ABBA's more popular in Australia than anywhere on earth.
Still?
Yep. They were number one in Australia before they were number one in Sweden.
Is Dire Straits still like the most selling Australian band of all time?
Maybe. That sounds like it would track.
Sounds like it tracks.
It was like, that was the first CD to sell a million CDs.
Got it.
And so that was that, because it had that, doo-doo-doo-dum, doo-doo-doo-dum, I want my, and that was the one that every douchebag.
Those Brothers in Arms.
Yeah, in 1985
went. Yeah, Brothers in Arms.
Just listen to the quality of the CD. Listen to it.
And the video was really cool because they had like CG in it and no one else had that yet.
Yeah. It was like they saw Max Headroom and then they sort of. I haven't brought up Max Headroom in years.
You know what's funny is that. Wait, we'll talk about Max Headroom in a second, but just the idea that you watch the video for Money for Nothing by Dire Straits. And you go, wow, we've progressed so much in the past 32 years. And you look at Minecraft. You're like, it was just, there was just Minecraft.
Minecraft's one I don't get. I see kids playing it. I don't understand the appeal of it. And I there must be something about it. Do you like it? Have you played it?
Played it, and I know that I would be addicted to it, and so I don't play it. Because it is highly addictive, because it's just all about gathering resources and world building and seeing how the environment affects everything you're doing. And
so it's kind of educational in a way?
It's really educational, yeah. It's really educational. Hank might love it if he's not playing it.
But he's not old. Four's too young for that. Yeah.
Oh, is he? Oh, four?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's probably too far. Yeah, that's pretty too young. Yeah. Oh, so he's four and he said that's fucked?
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
He said that at three.
For some reason, I thought that he was like 11.
No, he said that at three. Oh. Yeah, he said that's fucked.
I'm so proud. But let's go back to Max Headroom for a second. Did you have a Max Headroom story?
No, I just remember that being a thing. We watched Max Headroom and his head clicked a bit. And
Matt Frewer.
Yeah, it was a guy in a mask, right? And we thought it was a video.
You thought it was a video?
Yeah.
And they just had some wavy stuff in the background. Yeah. And they kind of just like edited it to go, da, 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 da.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was all
it
was.
How is that a thing?
You know, that period of time had so many of that pop culture snapshot of that era had like... Pee-wee's Big Adventure and Max Headroom and Alf and like just all these things that were so, you know, Back to the Future.
Yeah, Alf was a weird one. We just had Alf. Like, who pitched that? Or what was the one that was really bad is Small Wonder.
Small Wonder, yeah.
How does Small Wonder get by?
Well, because it's for 10-year-olds.
Was it?
Yes.
It was. Well, I thought that was a proper show.
No, it was like a sitcom for kids. You had Out of This World and Small Wonder, and so it was basically just a laugh track loaded with dad jokes.
That's one thing Australia can't do. Australia has never made a good sitcom. And we try. Oh, God, we try. We've never... Not one. Not one. I'll tell you one to watch. Hey, Dad. If you can get a clip of Hey, Dad.
All right.
Oh, God. It was just kids like, Hey, Dad. Stop it, Dad. And it was the old principle of Mum's Dead. Right? That's how everything starts in sitcom world. Because Full House was Mum's Dead.
Right. Oh, yeah, of course.
How are you going to get along?
How you going to... Yeah,
Brady
exactly.
Bunch. Mum's Dead.
Yeah.
You know, always how... Different Strokes. Mum's Dead.
Well, yeah, because it
What are we going to do now?
A sitcom called Mum's Dead is a good...
Yeah, yeah.
Good
it's always kids sitcom. like Punky Brewster. Mum's dead.
Yeah. You got to start with a dead mum because it instantly
makes you laugh, yeah. Doesn't it? Mum's
well,
dead.
It instantly creates empathy for the lead characters. Like, well, how can you not care about these characters now because
their mother
is dead?
Yeah, yeah. But still, somehow through a plucky attitude they've gotten through. Your mum's dead. What are we going to do now? And so that's what Hey Dad was. It was just a dad that lived like with his kids, and it ran for so long that the kids grew up, and then just other kids came into the house. You know when they do that in a sitcom, they try to freshen it up.
Get
a new young kid in.
Yeah, because then it's just, you know, at a certain point, Two and a Half Men just becomes Three Men.
Yeah, yeah.
Unless of course the half is supposed to be the Charlie Sheen character, and that's the joke of it.
Yeah, was maybe. That's the joke of it. Well, Hey Dad, the guy in the end turned out he was molesting some of the kids, so that was bad.
Oh, not on the show. That would be a bad storyline.
No, it was a bad storyline. some of the kids that were meant to be his daughters, he was...
Gotcha.
He was no good. He
wasn't not a good guy.
He wasn't a good guy. Australia's got a... There was another guy called Rolf Harris who was like... He used to sing children's songs, and he was beloved, and then it turned out he was off doing
that as well.
Oh, man, I had his albums and everything. There's a guy called Jimmy Savile, if you want to look this up. You know?
Oh, yeah. The Jim will fix it guy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like, that is just a
what happened with
nightmare.
Jimmy Savile was, I moved to Britain in 2000, right? And he hadn't been found out to be a pedophile. He got found out that they found out that he was a pedophile after he died.
Oh, my God.
Right, so he got away with it the whole time.
Motherfucker.
But Jimmy Savile, and he was like this had old sort of white hair, and he wore gold jewelry, he always had a cigar, and he was low.
Yeah.
And I remember, like I said on stage a couple of times, I go, I'm just new to this country, but that guy's definitely a pedophile, right? I said on stage, and the amount of people who went, you shut the fuck up, I love Jimmy Savile, he's from my childhood, right? I called it. it needed an outsider's view. Like, they just because they grew up with him, they couldn't see it.
He's wrapped in red flags.
Oh yeah, he was wearing a tracksuit.
Yeah, there you go.
You know what I mean? I'm like that guy's a pedophile.
Come on, guys.
Yeah, no, like put the picture up on the website. You'll all agree he looks like a pedophile.
You know, but there is something like sometimes something will happen with me, and I'll refer to it as sarcastic psychic.
Yeah,
which is. You because when you're making a joke, you're usually just having a split second gut reaction to something
sure,
and
sure.
just commenting on it, and you find a lot of the time, you know, like a number of times, without really realizing what the mechanisms were in place, you call the situation because you were just
intuition.
You just went blah, and it just came out, and that was all of the unconscious stuff coming together and giving you the information to make that commentary.
I'd agree with that. I dated a girl who I don't believe in intuition or mystical powers or something, but fucking hell, this chick could call anything. She'd wake up in the morning and she'd go, I have a bad feeling about today. Something bad's going to happen. And then something bad would happen. If she said that, I was freaking out the whole day.
But then after that, after she does that one or two times, and then you really buy into it, and every time, sometimes you might look for things
to connect the dots.
Yeah,
yeah. And also, like if she came up to me and she said, you've done something dodgy today, like you've texted a girl or something like that. And then, you know, probably I had. So the fact that she just called that day, I was like, oh, man, intuition.
Yeah, my wife's really intuitive about stuff that way. But I don't, a friend of mine like is friends with a psychic.
Mm.
And she's like, but she told me all these things. And I go, yeah, someone could tell me my grandfather's middle name and I'd be like, oh, all right. Yeah, there's probably something to that.
I don't agree with that.
I think it'd be fun to believe that stuff.
I've been to them because I enjoy the little thing. You know, you're at a fair, I'll get me palm read.
Right.
Oh, tarot cards. Interesting. Oh, the death card. Ooh. Like, yeah, no, I don't believe any of that rubbish. But, you know, I believe that people can have intuition in the sense that you can read subconsciously people's body movements and stuff like that, and someone's being a bit shady or there's something going on with that person.
Or that your body, that you are either through other senses or at least through your peripheral understanding of the world, your peripheral vision, whatever, your brain is processing a lot of things without your conscious mind going, oh, this is what is going on in this room. Like, you are getting, you're absorbing information and processing it.
Right, right.
But I wouldn't think it's because a dead lady is whispering things.
No, I don't believe there's any ghosts. I don't think there's any.
Mom's dead.
Yeah, mom's dead. I'll never see her again. My mom once said to me, she goes, so you don't believe in heaven or hell, so you believe that after I die, you'll never see me again. And I go, yep. And she goes, and you're happy about that, are you? I went, over the moon.
does your mom have a good sense of humor?
No. She's humorless. And she's just a very easy person to stir up. Like, me and my brothers, like, at Christmas, we start ranking everyone that my mother knows, like in favoritism.
Oh, of course.
Yeah. Okay. Like, what's the rankings this year?
Right.
Who's doing well? You know?
Yeah.
And mom goes, I love you all equally. And then it's always like my son, because he's the youngest grandchild. Well, Hank comes in number one.
Yep.
He's number one. And, then my brother got divorced, so his ex-wife is right down the bottom now. She's a bitch.
Right.
And my dad's always second to last. You know what I mean? We go through all the things like that. And then, like, last year we were doing it to her and just teasing her. I'd be about fifth or something like that, right? And so my eldest nephew is called Max. He's 18. And then my mum just snapped and she went, do you want to know who's my favorite? It's Max. It's always been Max. And Max just is like, oh, God. I'm the favorite. That's a lot of pressure.
Well, it's really fun to... It's fun to give people shit who don't... Like, my wife is the sweetest woman in the world.
Mm.
But when she'll say things like... She'll say, like... You know, I'll go, oh, I hope I don't die today or something like that. And she'll go, if that happened, I would be destroyed. I would never be with anyone ever again. I suppose you would probably be with some whore, right? And I go, well, yeah, that's how you get over that. Like, I can't help but make those. The truth is, yes, I would be devastated forever.
Of course you'd die again.
But I have to make those jokes because I just get that reaction where she was like, that is so rude. And that makes me laugh so hard.
What is the appropriate amount of time that you meant to wait? As well, after
I don't
that.
Know. Mum's dead.
Yeah, mum's dead. Well, that's the thing. It's because Patton Oswalt just got engaged, and some people are being a bit rude about it. And I think, what's the problem?
Well, I don't think it's their place to say anything about it.
You don't know what happened in that relationship.
You don't know the relationship. You don't know the grieving process.
And how dare you know how much he cried or how much he whatever. That really bugged me the other day on the internet.
That's infuriating. It's like he's... the man deserves to be happy. If he has found someone that makes him happy, how long is he supposed to be under a veil of, utter misery and sadness?
That makes you comfortable.
That makes you feel okay. Yeah, fuck everyone. Like, those are the kind of things I hear where it's go, fuck everyone, Like, let the guy be happy.
Yeah.
Oh, hey, I really feel bad that your wife passed away, but I need you to be on my emotional time clock for what I feel is acceptable.
Exactly. Yeah. No, that made me very angry. I read that like 2 days ago. And he's such a nice fucking fellow.
Lovely.
As well. Such a nice guy.
I mean, one of the nicest and also most prolific comedy people in the history of comedy.
Yeah.
Well,
so we're fans, Patton.
Yeah. I love you, Patton. I am happy for you. Yeah. I am happy for
congratulations,
you.
Congratulations, mate. I hope you're very happy.
So what do you got to go because I heard you had an hour. You had a 1 o'clock out.
I do this thing where I got to go write me show.
You got to go write your program.
Yeah.
You got to go write your stories.
Oh, yeah. One of the executives from Comedy Central has shown up today.
Well, I really hope that we get to hang out more just socially because I have now 2 pinball machines in my house.
What do you got?
I have Adam's Family.
Yeah,
and
Great
I got
Machine.
And I got The Walking Dead. I wanted a new one and a classic one.
Yeah, I got four, but I'm really just playing Medieval Madness all the time.
Yeah,
and I got the new Ghostbusters one, and it's very flashy. There's a lot of shit going on, but it's a little bit too much stuff.
There's two. I'm not. Lydia loves Adam's Family. I love the Walking Dead one, but I find the distance between the flippers is slightly too far on Adam's Family,
right.
And it's infuriating.
And it's a wide body as well.
It's very wide, and but the two that we really want to get are South Park and Twilight Zone.
Yeah, South Park's a fun one. Twilight Zone's very good. I was thinking of getting one for The Office if we get another 10 episodes, and they're just bringing out a brand new Star Wars.
Oh,
not,
shit.
Not the new Star Wars movies, from like A New Hope Star Wars.
Oh, incredible.
Yeah, and it's got like a Death Star that you can shoot the ball into, and the Death Star explodes, and you got to get up to that thing. And
when you come over, you say, "I have a Star Wars pachinko machine."
Oh,
and it's like a brand new pachinko machine, so it has all these like all these weird things happen. So it's all Star Wars video playback, but there's Japanese writing on it, so I have no idea what's happening in the game. But it's really fun,
right?
So you got to come over.
So what happens is pachinko? It's like little triggers, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, yeah. Nothing really happens. You move this dial and these balls start shooting and go down this vertical pinball and this, you know, this kind of vertical.
How big is it? How big is it?
I mean,
it's a real big thing.
That
okay.
tall and, you know, that deep.
And yeah. That would have been in an arcade, would have it?
Or? It would have been an arcade. It would have been in a pachinko casino.
Oh, that's like China or Japan?
Japan. I mean, maybe they have it in China too, but yeah, when we were there.
Yeah, Japan's crazy for it.
Pachinko casinos are really active, and they have to like, you can't win money directly from it. So the way they get around it is like you win little, you win something to redeem for like a little trinket prize, and you kind of walk around the corner outside the place and you can redeem the trinket prize for money.
Right.
So
right,
it's
right.
like this weird loop. It's like, well, just fucking make it leak. Just get the money. Like, what, yeah, you know yeah, what you're
yeah.
doing.
So, yeah, so there's a porn store that will sell the trinket.
Yeah, exactly.
Prize.
Exactly.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But congratulations on your show.
Thank you. Hopefully it stays around for a while.
I'm sure it will.
I'm the lead into your lead in.
Yeah.
Is that
and,
right?
And Alex adores you. I go, I'm Jim Jeffries. And Alex goes, he's the best. He's just the best. I love that guy. Ask him about the time he got punched in the face on stage.
Yeah, I like Alex too.
He's the best.
He's just a stand-up guy. It's our manager, by the way.
I've been with him since 2003. I don't think I've ever seen him like get mad or douchey one time. He's just a problem solver.
Yeah, yeah.
He just figures out how to get shit done. And he will allow you to vent when you're venting, and he's a great sounding board. And, you know, with the exception of telling you not to have Brad Pitt be your weatherman, he usually is very yeah. intuitive and understands the business really well.
Yeah, he's like, does he answer the phone like this to you? Chris Hardwick.
Yes, he does!
Jim Jefferies.
Hardwick, Alex Murray. Chris Hardwick. Alex Murray.
And then he just says your name with an uptick.
Chris Hardwick. A lot of stuff. Going through a lot of offers today.
Yeah.
I got a stack.
Jim Jefferies. Got some news. Got some checks for you here as well.
I should have him on the podcast sometime. I don't think he would like doing a podcast. I don't think he likes talking about himself, but he's been around. He was like a young music prodigy.
Yeah, and then he moved to comedy.
He moved to comedy. Yeah,
he's got an interesting stable of comedians.
He does.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
his early idea was to get really established guys like, you know, Louis Anderson and John Panette, and then young, you know, guys that he really
thought would happen,
like Gaffigan,
yeah,
or me, or Todd Glass, and then he would sort of use the leverage from the famous guys to help kind of get the young guys sure. in, and he's just
I don't know many of the young guys. I know it's like me, you, Gaffigan, Glass,
James Davis, I think.
James Davis, who's a Hood Adjacent TV show.
Jonah Ray, I think.
Jonah Ray, Nikki Glaser.
Nikki Glaser as well, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So he's it's a good group. It's a good group of people, nice people. They're all good folk.
Well, I'm sorry I haven't seen your show yet. It's because my schedule sucks.
Think about the Daily Show, but it's read a bit slower.
And it's once a week.
And it's once a week, and the accent's slightly different. That's what everyone goes, oh, your show is just a rip-off of the Today Tonight, like John Oliver. I'm going, yeah, that's from the Daily Show, and the Daily Show's from SNL to, you know.
Yeah, I mean, if you just start going back.
Like it's the difference with all these shows is the host and like little segments you do and stuff like that. But
yeah.
Being essentially a person behind a desk reading news is not reinventing the egg.
But it's also as dumb. It's also about as dumb as going, oh, you're doing stand up with a microphone, huh? Yeah, that's what this other guy does. Yeah, yeah. I know. But we say different things.
Yeah. What I have found out is that Trump supporters hate if you even mention him.
Yeah. I like your comedy, but what do you have to talk about Trump all the time? And you're like, well, not all the time, but he's in the news a lot, and we're a news show, so...
One time on Talking Dead, a guest made a joke about Sarah Palin, and it literally lasted 2 seconds. Hmm. I was like, oh, it's like Sarah Palin. The flood of... at me, fuck you, how dare you make the show political? I moved on really quickly. I just glossed over it. We didn't stay on it. Fuck you, you made the show political. I can't control what people say. It was 4 seconds of your life. It's over.
And they start calling me a sellout. Like, you sellout, you used to be good. And blah, blah. And
how dare you get paid to do anything?
And you're like, but my political leanings were always this way. But besides that, I try not to mention him every week.
You're only a sellout if you have your very famous bit about gun control, and then
I do an advert for guns.
And then you do an advert for guns. That's selling out. It is violating your core belief system for gain.
Well, in saying that, we're about to record a field piece in a few days for a later episode of me and Rob O'Neill shooting guns. And Rob O'Neill's the guy who shot Bin Laden.
Uh-huh.
Right. So I'm going to go to a shooting range.
That's incredible.
Yeah, and it's also because obviously he's a pro Second Amendment guy. Me and him have strangely become friends. He came to a party I was at, and he likes stand-up, whatever. And now it's just hanging out with fucking the guy shot Bin Laden. It's a very interesting fella.
But you know what's a...
Do you remember when we were talking to Harry Styles and he walked away from us?
That was hilarious. Yes. It was you and me and Jimmy Carr.
Yeah.
And Harry Styles was there, and it was right when Trump was starting to gain traction in the election. So we were talking about Trump.
We were talking about the primary elections and what's going to happen and then Jeb and all this type of stuff.
And then Harry Styles realized, like, I don't need to be here right now.
Yeah.
And literally just walked away.
My life doesn't need to know about the world. Thank you very much. Goodbye.
And what was so funny about it is that it wasn't like a, hey, sorry, guys.
It wasn't rude. It was like,
rude.
It's like, I'm living on a different plane, fellas.
Totally different plane. And I don't fault him at all. But you could just see his eyes glaze over, and he just like kind of put his head down and just walked away. Yeah. And it's like, oh, he doesn't have to. Yeah, he's certainly.
We felt very old.
Yeah. Oh, 100%.
He was wearing like a red and white striped shirt.
And then
big,
really
thick shirt.
Open.
He had long hair. He looked like Michael Hutchins.
Yeah, really looked like Michael Hutchins. Mm, with the open shirt and the, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. The girl I've been dating...
That hairless, wet seal of a body.
The girl I've been dating didn't know what NXS was. And she goes, well, no music comes out of Australia. I'm like, Minotal.
What the fuck?
Minotal? Fucking NXS?
Yeah, NXS.
ACDC?
Yeah, there's been some...
Yeah, and so she went, NXS? What type of a name is NXS? I'm like...
Men at Work?
Kick was the biggest album of one year. It was the biggest album.
I mean, every song on that album was a hit.
It was a hit.
Massive hit on MTV. They won all the Video Music Awards that year.
They were massive.
Devil Inside, I Need You Tonight.
Suicide Blonde
was from X.
Oh, it was from X, because that was written about Kylie.
Yeah. Oh, was it?
Yeah.
That I did not know. Also Kylie Minogue.
And then Kylie wrote Better the Devil You Know about Michael.
Oh, my God. I loved Michael Hutchins because the year... I loved NXS before Kick, when they had the album
Like
The Swing. Listen Like Thieves and The Swing, and they're a fucking phenomenal. They were just a great band.
They're a great band.
And the year
and he was the closest thing we had to like the guy from The Doors. Jim Morrison was, in my opinion.
But he wasn't. But Michael Hutchins wasn't annoying, and I find
no, he
Jim,
wasn't annoying, and he had a much better voice.
He had a great voice. Yeah, I think I find Jim Morrison to be
well. Jim Morrison, the people
annoying.
Who sort of think like, oh man, there's a Lizard King and you're 22, mate.
Yeah.
I mean, fucking, like, when he was behaving like that, he died at 27, but when he was behaving like that, he was just a fucking punk kid.
It was just a lot of, like, it's a dude at a frat party who just starts free-associating words, and girls go, oh my God, he's so deep. Like, no.
Liar, fire, yeah. Liar.
These words all rhyme, I do it all the time.
Yeah, no time to wallow in the mire. Like, what the fuck are you talking about? Funeral prior? Fuck off, no one uses these words. Stop. Father, I want to kill you.
Someone's just found a thesaurus.
Yeah, that's all it is. And they're wearing like an artist shirt.
Yeah.
But Michael Hutchins that year when he won all those awards for Kick, he had these like kind of like dorky glasses on, and it just made me feel like, oh my God, he's kind of a dork. I fucking love him. Like, I related to him so much.
We had the school that was near my school, our rival school, right? It was like, oh, they're a bunch of idiots, fucking morons, fucking nah, like that. And they always had, NXS comes from our school. And we were like, yeah.
All right. Give
Kurt Pengelly and the Farris brothers all came from that school. Michael Hutchins didn't join the band last, but all the brothers in the band.
But what you were saying before about the guy who shot Bin Laden is that this idea, which is now a revolutionary idea in our modern society, that sometimes you can actually be friends with someone without agreeing with 100% of the things that they believe in.
I just remembered an In Excess story.
What?
This is a great story. I've never told it.
Please.
This is one of my favorite things. Okay. We might, maybe not. Anyway. So I was doing a gig in Sydney at the Emerald Theatre. It doesn't matter what theatre it was, but anyway. And I was doing a gig, and then backstage, Tim Farris, the guitarist from In Excess, wanted to come backstage. And I was like, fucking, yeah, I'd love to meet Tim Farris from In Excess. So I'm hanging out with him. And he has a brace on his hand. And it turned out while he was yachting, a bit of rope ripped his... Is that index finger?
Yeah.
Ripped his index finger off, right? And so they tried to stitch it back on. But the thing is, he's like, yeah, I'll never play guitar again because that was his chord hand, right?
Oh, God.
He goes, yeah, I'll never play guitar again because I'm missing that finger. I can't play guitar anymore. And I go, so the band's over? And he goes, pretty much we're not performing anymore. This is like last year. And I said, so your finger was more vital than Michael Hutchins?
Did he have a response to that?
Yeah, I think he laughed. I can't quite remember, but it was. I remember, like, I said it earnestly, like, wow, because they replaced the singer like three times.
Right.
That was the first TV show, like, making the band show, where they, people, like, before Pop Idol and all that.
Yeah, they recast.
In Excess recast on television the part of Michael Hutchins.
Right. Oh, my God, that's amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
That's something that I would have thought but not said out loud.
Yeah, I was dumb.
But you know what? You know, I feel like the pass that you get with a lot of people is that I don't think people feel like you're being a dick. I think they're like, oh, he's really sincere. Like, it's not, you're not attacking. He's like, there's a dickish way to say that, but there's a genuine, like, there's like a boyish, there's just sort of a boyish.
He's just a bit dumb.
Curiosity and wonder to that I think people are like, oh, he doesn't, you know, like, it's a fair question. It's a fair question.
Yeah. His finger was more vital.
Well, please come back soon.
Oh, thanks for having me.
And please come over to the house and
pinball it up.
Show me how to beat Adam's family.
Yeah.
All right.
All right, mate.
Enjoy your burrito.
Thanks, mate.
Jim Jeffrey Show is on, is it Tuesdays?
10:30 Tuesdays.
10:30 Tuesdays on Comedy Central. Enjoy your burrito.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
This episode of the Nerdist Podcast is brought to you by Dr. Katz, the audiophile. So if you're a fan of the cult classic comedy Dr. Katz, it is back with the original cast now as a free premium podcast at audible.com/Dr. Katz. 15 of comedy's biggest stars bare their souls on the couch with Hollywood's favorite shrink, Jonathan Katz, for 15 minutes. So if you're a fan of Dr. Katz, this is absolutely up your alley. Check it out. There's a new episode with Weird Al is there right now. Listen to Dr. Katz, the audio files, available exclusively now at audible.com/Dr. Katz.